Welcome to Can Queer, home of Canada's queer media. My name is Luke Smith.
And I am Sebastian.
And thank you for joining me again, Sebastian, in the little home studio we've got going on here. This is the only travel you do all week, I hear.
I literally do not step outside, except for, like, putting garbage in the skip.
In the UK and I think Australia, people are now dressing up in costumes to put their garbage out to the curb.
Okay.
Because why not? So, yeah.
If you're going to be seen, you may as well be seen as fabulous.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I usually just put on a hoodie and shoes. Like, you know those old worn out shoes that you should probably throw out? But they slip on so quickly, so you keep them just to take things out to the garbage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have a pair of those.
I got a pair of them. Yeah. They're red. Red shoes, yeah.
Weirdly, I think mine would have the red pair as well.
Oh.
Yeah, matching red shoes.
Fancy that.
Now, to all of our listeners, this is another tough week. This epic adventure that doesn't seem to be ending yet. We had some great feedback from our last episode, and I am very happy to say that I found a Eurovision on the YouTube.
Oh.
Yes.
Oh.
It is 2011. You said 2011.
Okay.
I think you think that's when Moldova was playing. But so I want our listeners to know, go to our social media, at TalkCanQueer on Facebook and the Twitter, where the access information for our Eurovision party will be posted. Because next weekend, next Saturday, at what's a good time? What's a good time for a Eurovision party? 7, 8-ish?
Sure.
Yeah. Can you do 7, 8-ish?
Probably, yeah.
Okay. Your mum's baking for it.
Okay.
Yeah, your mum's gonna bring some cookies to her webcam.
Oh,
and then
man.
we can look at them. Because we're excited to have...
Now, for me, that's the normal experience because I'm gluten intolerant.
This is true. You can just look at them.
Yeah.
And weep. But yes, so next Saturday, that is for our listeners here, that would be Saturday the 18th of April. We will be hosting our first Eurovision Zoom party. Hopefully we don't get Zoom bombed. Apparently there was a council meeting in Somerset in England where they got Zoomed bombed and somebody started blasting gay pornography. So they're really important discussion about roundabout placements and road infrastructure got spiced up a little bit. But yes, 7:30 p.m. April the 18th, check out our social media channels for the Zoom login details. Are you excited about 2011 Eurovision?
I mean, I guess, sure, yeah.
You sound like you've bought into this as much as I have.
Well, it's just, I've seen quite a bit of it, so the anticipation is kind of... Because, like, usually in most years, I avoid listening to the upcoming Eurovision music because I don't want to be spoiled on it, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I remember the first time we did this was 2016, and a whole bunch of the B-sides, like the people who didn't even breach the top 15.
Yeah.
I really liked, because I don't know if you remember this, but when Belgium came on, I squeed. I made a squee noise. And then your partner was like, what? And I was like, it sounds like a Sailor Moon soundtrack. And he was like, oh my God. And then all of a sudden he was super into it and it was a thing. And I wouldn't have had that experience if I had been spoiled on it in advance. Whereas with 2011, I already know a few of the tracks. So.
But do you remember them all?
I don't. I don't remember the order that they came in. I don't remember the tension
of
seeing who would win.
So we're going to give it a go. If it's a success and people enjoy it, maybe we'll do 2016 in a couple of weekends after that.
We might do 1978.
1978. Wow. Old school.
That's when ABBA won.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Really old school.
Ah.
Well, we're doing 2011. April 18th, 7:30 p.m. Check out our Facebook and Twitter at TalkCanQueer if you want to join the CanQueer Eurovision viewing party.
Mm-hmm.
I am pretty excited. Now, I got a Facebook message from my mother.
Oh, from your mother.
Telling me that I should play this song on the radio.
Okay.
Now, I don't think my mother realizes that we are a gay radio show.
Yeah.
And this song is not particularly gay.
Okay.
It's not by a gay person. It's not a gay person speaking. I don't think it's a gay person that remixed it. But she thought it would be hilarious.
Is it Iron Maiden's Run to the Hills?
No, but that is a very good song. I do like that song.
It's about dragons.
Yes. I like a bit of AC/DC every now and then. You know what I mean? You know what it was? I had the biggest crush on the drummer of an AC/DC tribute band in high school.
Oh my God.
That's why. His name was Ashley Elkin. He was Ginger. One of the only gingers in like a 30-mile radius.
In Wales.
In Wales, yeah. From the valleys, back in Wales.
The only ginger in
Wales. The only ginger in the school, I think, actually. As I remember now, yeah. But no, it was... I went very Welsh then, didn't I? Blow my neck. Oh, very Welsh. Oh my gosh. Oh, yes.
I almost bet tea on my nose.
Actually, there's a great song that I think during this kind of crisis time, it's a song about... It's called Amar Ó Thaobh. And it's essentially, We're Still Here.
Okay.
Despite everything, we're still here. Mm. And it's a Welsh patriotic song written by a Welsh folk singer in sort of the 80s and 90s, I think is when he wrote it.
Okay.
And it's all about, you know, the English invading, but we're still here. Thatcher shutting down the mines, but we're still here. The language being obliterated, but we're still here. And Amar Ó Thaobh, and it's very... anthemic almost.
Okay.
I'll play a quick clip before we get back to the other song I was referring to. But yeah, this is Amar Ó Thaobh, just to give you a sense of what I'm talking about. So, I mean, that song, it's the lyrics, Gwaith of Pawb a Popeth, which means, despite everything and everyone, we're still here. Let me hear
it. It gave me Eurovision vibes.
It does have strong Eurovision vibes,
doesn't it? It felt like the kind of thing that would have come in third in the judges' picks, but 15th in the popular vote.
Yeah, that's by David the One.
I've watched enough Eurovision that I can put that prediction on.
Yeah, you know what? I think if Britain went in with Amar Ó Thaobh, which is sometimes native language music does weirdly well.
It does well, but Eurovision. It never wins. It always comes in second or third.
Well, Britain's track record is 52 of 52.
Oh my God.
So I think.
But that year when Russia sent the little old ladies who baked bread during the thing and sang wildly out of tune, but clearly were having a good time anyway.
Yeah, they were having a jolly good time.
They came in like, what, sixth or something?
Yeah, yeah.
Just a bunch of little old
bread
ladies.
Bread baking.
Yeah, bread baking.
Absolutely. Well, this is the song that my mother said that I should play. You may recognize it from a speech that was given earlier last week. For our listeners who haven't been under a rock, you may have even heard this video. We're not going to play the whole song.
Okay.
Because, you know, but here's a little sample. We will link it on our social media. This is Trudeau speaking moistly.
I'm not a medical expert. These are the things we know. Keep 2 meters apart. What I have heard from medical experts, these are the things we know that prevent you from speaking moistly. Speaking moistly. Keep 2 meters apart. Speaking moistly. Speaking moistly. Keep 2 meters apart. Speaking moistly. Speaking moistly.
I think that's enough amusement for one day. I think our show has kicked it off with a bit of Welsh folk singing and then Trudeau speaking moistly.
I mean, I like it better than people pointing out songs where they clearly misunderstand the lyrics. Like a lot, I read an article on one of the news sources that we go to saying that Robin's Dancing on My Own is the music of the era, because it has the words Dancing on My Own in the title, but the song is actually about going to a club and then going home by yourself because people didn't notice you dancing. So, I mean, it's actually it's a sad song. It's and it's about, you know, dancing hard to try attract attention and then nobody notices. It's not actually about solitude. It's about being ignored. Like, it's kind of a misreading of what the song is actually about. There's been a lot of that where people are like, I love this song. It's like, because it has those four words in the title. Yeah. That's not what the song's about there, buddy.
Yeah. Now let's go a bit deeper on that.
Yeah.
Now, tell me.
Well, you know what song that I've been.
What song have you been
standing
jamming?
By?
Oh, Stand By Me?
No. Oh, like, okay. The song that I think that everybody needs during these hard times.
Yes, which is?
Rock Lobster.
By the B-52s.
Yes, by the B-52s.
Absolutely, yes. I will get behind that. We should have played the Peptides. We have.
Do you know what, though? There's always next week.
Always next week. Yes, we won't be jumping into the Peptides just yet. But let's jump into a song. And when we come back from the song, earlier this week, I did an interview with a gay man who runs a LGBT business here in the city of Ottawa.
I think we've had him on the show before.
I think we have, yes. Yeah. Kevin was very gracious in talking to me. His cell reception for downtown Ottawa, which is weird, wasn't particularly great. So there are some points where he cuts out a little bit.
That's normal.
Yeah. So we
don't have good reception in Ottawa.
Yeah. So his audio isn't particularly great.
I'm sure he was still lovely, though. Kevin's he's an upstanding fella.
He is fantastic. This is The Community by The Gays. I had mentioned The Gays, which is the band out of Montreal.
G-A-Y-S, not G-A-Z-E.
Yes. The Gays. Because The Gays, this particular band, had done a live stream from his bedroom. Which is a lot of musicians have been doing this to kind of raise and maintain their profile.
Right.
I enjoyed it. I happened to be on Facebook when he was doing it.
So. It's a fantastic period for folk artists and remixers.
Yeah.
Anything in between, you're kind of screwed. But if you got like a dude with a guitar or, you know, a lady with a mixing board, then you're golden.
Absolutely. Yeah. This is The Gays with The Community. And we will be back just after this.
Oh,
I am very excited to have Kevin, I think you're the owner manager of Stroke Deagle, one of the sort of boutique stores here in Ottawa. You have a great online presence as well. I've invited you on because we have a few different friends of ours who are LGBT and they own and run their own businesses. And, you know, in the middle of this COVID crisis, we're seeing a lot of people struggle. Before we get into the gay side of things, how has it been for your store? Because, of course, much like many other LGBT businesses, you know, really reliant on foot traffic, I would imagine.
Yes. Hi. Thanks for having me. Yes. Hi, Luke. Thanks for having me. It's nice to be on down now for almost about 3.5 weeks. Traffic. We do have an online presence, as you mentioned, but unfortunately, for the losses that we would have in
during this crisis, everyone is trying to obviously, you know, struggle through as much as they can. You know, a lot of people have lost their jobs. A good friend of mine had to lay off some of her staff relatively quickly into this. You know, one of the things about LGBT businesses is that they often provide, you know, other LGBT folks that kind of break that they're looking for, that earning potential, that chance to have a job. Where are you sitting with your staff? Have you had to let people go? Are you looking forward to that wage subsidy kicking in?
Yes, unfortunately, all of my staff have been laid off. We laid them off just slightly after when the store was shuttered, and with sales dropping between 80 and 90%, even with the government support on that subsidy, was the subsidy, I believe, up to about 75% now for businesses that qualify. So if that's the case and the store is able to qualify, then I will give the option for the staff to come back if they would like. There are other, you know, considerations, however, as well. One of my staff members, for example, lives over in Elmer on the Quebec side. And as you probably know, yes, so she actually wouldn't even be able to get to the store to work because obviously selling men's clothing is deemed an essential service. So she wouldn't be able to cross the border.
That's, I mean, I shouldn't laugh at it, but that is really unfortunate. I know there's some options around furloughing staff. I think if you do that, you can claim back the government deductions. But I mean, it certainly must be quite challenging. And I wonder, have you seen much of a response from the LGBT community? Have folks come out to support you during this really difficult time?
Yes, we've had a lot of people reach out to us. I mean, obviously, it's not just a difficult time for the store. A lot of people are facing struggles and, you know, they may be losing income as well. So it's not something, you know, a lot of people don't have a lot of extra cash sitting somewhere for them to support a local business. But even if they don't, they've been, you know, kind enough to reach out just to say that they're thinking of us, or, you know, people have been posting on our social media wishing as well. We've had some people do use, say, on Yelp or other channels to help with our NYS, for sure.
Oh, I mean, that's really quite heartening. You know, we've talked a lot on our show, myself and Sebastian, about, you know, we talk a lot, when it comes up a lot in around Pride. So, you know, we see, you know, nearly every Pride in the country brought to you by TD Bank and Absolute Vodka. You know, and which is great. It's good that they're putting the money in, but we seem to be losing a lot of the small LGBT businesses that really was a backbone of Pride for many years. So I think, you know, there's definitely a presence between LGBT owners and friendly employment places, and then the LGBT community as a whole. You know, is this one of those occasions where, you know, you've been called on to help support the community? And you're seeing a bit of that support come back, a bit of return of the karma?
It's funny to talk about Pride and with the larger corporations supporting them. I 100% agree with you. It's great that the money is going into support. But it's something that's got so big, sponsorships or by the bigger fish. So we tried to focus a lot on the focuses. So we on sponsoring some of the local LGBTQ sports team, or like a small local initiative
for younger kids that are able to go to camp over the summer. It's called Ten Oaks Project. So like smaller things that we're able to make more of a difference in. So we're definitely seeing a good relationship us more during this time, which is really nice to have.
I mean, it makes me think of, you know, of course, everyone has been impacted by this. I can't think of any of our listeners who wouldn't have been personally impacted in one way or another by this. But I think in talking to you, it's quite enlightening to see that we talk about small local businesses and the wage subsidy sort of in the abstract. But in reality, we're talking about actual employees, folks that I'm sure you're very close to, who you've had no option but to lay off, and that knock-on effect in their communities and with their families. And also with your business, the support and the role it's played in the community, supporting Ten Oaks and others, there's certainly a lot of ripples that are coming out. You know, you close your doors and the ripple effect seems to be reaching the much wider community. Do you think that's just you, or do you think that's reflective of other local businesses and LGBT businesses?
They're all in the same boat as I am. And it's so disheartening because we've all had to lay off staff. And as you said, we're so close to them because, you know, myself personally, I've had two staff members that have been with me almost since the store opened, and that's about 10 years now. So to see them, you know, not be able to come into work anymore, and to know that, you know, a good portion of their livelihood is no longer being given to them in the near future, at least.
All local businesses, I think, should be supported during this time. But I think it's worth our listeners casting their mind back and thinking about what small local events were they, you know, very happy to go to and engage in, and who is supporting those and backing those up. You know, I think millennials as a whole tend to shop with our morals quite a little bit. You know what I mean? There's a lot of buy local mentality with millennials and other folks, of course. But I think during this crisis, with that push towards Made in Canada and a push towards supporting small local businesses, it makes me wonder, you know, if everyone is able to get out the other side of this, if we would have a community that is more introspective in terms of how it shops, do you think that we'll be more locally focused if we manage to get through all this?
I think really hit the nail on the head, Luke. A lot of the younger people, the millennials and the younger generations, are a little more full, and they don't seem to be as interested in, you know, giving their money to corporations that they don't see a local impact from. I do hope that you are right, and I do hope that if we all make it through this, and I'm sure we will, and, you know, I hope that everybody we are on the other side, there will be a little bit more of a change. And
I want to thank you so much for taking the time to chat with me here. You know, the reason why I wanted to interview yourself is because it's not just about Stroke the Eco and that one store. It's about the impact on your life, Kevin, the impact on the lives of your employees who, like you said, you know, after a long time, you know, it must be heartbreaking to see that. And then the ripple impact across our entire community. And sort of if ever there was a time, you know, you've got a hole in your sock, you know, your underwear's running a bit threadbare. If ever there was a time to take a look at very carefully who and where you're spending your money and what the impact of those dollars has, I think now is that time more than ever. What's your website so people can take a look?
Oh, thank you. It's strokedego.ca is our website, and you can check us out on stroked_ego. And that'll give us or keep you up to date on what's going on with us. And
so your store is one of the few in the very lucky position that you were already, you know, relatively tooled to be able to support online sales. I imagine it's not a lick on your foot traffic. Not all of the stores that we've been made aware of had their ducks in the row to be able to take online orders. Do you think online orders will be able to support you through this lockdown period?
It will definitely help, yes. We've had to, unfortunately, negotiate a lot of our delay payments. From a clothing perspective or a fashion season, unfortunately, January and February are two of the slowest sales months for our store, at least, and I'm sure a lot of the stores are in the same boat. And we also are receiving a lot of our new spring products for the people that are going south on vacation, or, you know, all the new stuff starts to arrive in the middle of February or so. Looking at the point where all of those orders, which were net 30 or net 60 are coming due. And just unfortunately, I don't think that all of the sales will be supported by online only.
Jeez. It was definitely a catch-22. Not many people expected the sheer impact of this coronavirus. And I don't think it's really anything that could be, you know, reasonably prepared for. Well, I want to thank you again so much for taking the time to chat with me, and hopefully folks will take a look at those local businesses and, you know, try and support them if they can. Well, thank you so much for chatting with me, Kevin. It's greatly appreciated.
You too, Luke. Thank you very much. And I hope you guys take care.
Hello and welcome back to Can Queer. That was an interview that I did earlier in the week with Kevin. I think, you know, the gist, as I mentioned in the interview, was that, you know, it's not just this small business that men's apparel, underwear and socks. It's not just that.
Yeah.
It is the young gay people that he hires, the employment that he's offering them, their families that are supported by this. And then also the fact that he supports local small charities like Camp Ten Oaks.
Yeah.
You know, I think Kevin here is a really good example of what's happening up and down this country.
Yeah.
And to all of our listeners, I encourage you to look into your small local communities. And like I said earlier, you know, think about those events where you've gone to and you're like, wow, I've really enjoyed this event or that event. Who are the people behind that? Who are the people? Who's helping to make that happen?
Let's be frank. Over the past maybe 15 years, it's largely been TD Canada Trust. They have been like the funding body behind most prides in Canada. But a lot of the smaller events tend to be...
The community stuff. Yeah,
the community stuff tends to be... backed by these small local businesses. And Kevin's actually a fantastic example of a very well-engaged local business.
Yeah.
There are long-term projections about that sort of thing becoming more common because it is starting to look like some kind of a universal base income is going to get rolled out over the next few months.
I mean, that's being rolled out in some communities, some countries. Some, yeah.
And past studies, especially the, what was it, Windsor? The one that was done in Northern Ontario. It was Thunder Bay.
Was it London?
I don't remember. Anyway, there was the study that they did in Ontario in the 70s and 80s. Not the one that was recent that got canceled by Ford, but there was the one that happened quite some time ago. And they actually found... Oh, no, it was in the prairies. It was in Manitoba. And they found that the number one benefactor was small local businesses. That people who, you know, always wanted to open a bakery, now they could, or they wanted to open a whatever repair service, or they wanted to do interior decorating, or they wanted to make pottery.
Yeah.
Now they could. So there's going to probably be an expansion of that. Like I am willing to say that there's going to be at least some increase. I wouldn't put money on much of an increase,
but there will be a 700% increase in sourdough bakeries as a result of the coronavirus. I'm putting $5, 700% increase in sourdough-based bakeries.
There's also a lot of concern about gay bars and other LGBT public spaces shutting. Yeah. Like, a lot of them are... I mean, obviously, they're shutting their doors because they have to. But some of them may not be able to afford to reopen them. Now, the good news is that people like to get out and... Especially gay dudes really like getting together in large numbers and getting debaucherous.
Yeah.
Approximately at 10 p.m. or later. So a lot of these businesses, people are very realistic of the fact that within 5 years, they're going to bounce back.
Mm.
But probably not at the same locations. Like a lot of the... Yeah,
but will they all? That's the real question because...
They won't all, obviously.
You know, in communities, like some of the listeners have been to the big cities, you know, Vancouver, Montreal, Toronto.
Yeah.
And they have villages, LGBT, like epicenters of queer culture.
Yeah.
Where things are amplified and fantastic. Like Rose Catherine and Davy Village.
You can just say St. Catherine Street.
No, I am determined to butcher it in French every time.
Because you know in Montreal, French speakers just say St. Catherine Street in English. With a French accent.
I mean, that's whatever. But anyway, it...
But Davy Village and St. Catherine Street in Montreal, Davy's being in Vancouver, are the only like healthy gay communities left in Canada.
Toronto is a shell.
Well, it's being surrounded by condos. It's being squeezed out. Ottawa formed its gay village just in time for it to get squeezed out by condos. And right at around the time when the village was formed here, it was in the process of reforming on Elgin Street. So all the flags are in the wrong place, but we're going to pretend like that's not true.
Yeah.
Like the city has decided formally. The city
designated that junction. This is the gay bit.
Yeah.
Even though the gays are all over there.
All over there, yeah.
It's this bit here.
And I'm willing to bet that's what's going to happen. The old bars in Toronto will not be able to reopen at their current location. But Toronto's a big city. There'll be a new quarter that opens. Like I am willing to put money on that. Maybe not a lot, like $20. Mm. I don't know if anyone's going to take me
up on that. You're not meeting me at my percentage of sourdough predictions?
I think we're going to see a whole lot more vegan cupcake places.
Yeah. Oh, end of the pantry, bare bones baking and cooking places. I can do mad things with lentils store. Oh. Yeah, I can imagine it. Actually, we went grocery shopping very recently. And the lineups around the block to get into the grocery store. A friend of mine bumped into walking the dog. I say bumped into. We were 2 meters away from each other, which is bumping in the modern parlance.
Did you speak moistly?
I did speak moistly, yes. but with my hand over my mouth, because he's an elderly gentleman.
Got it.
And he said that he went to Walmart and there were 400 people lined up and around the parking lot. I mean, that's some dedication to get your lentils and your bread and butter and stuff. And
hopefully it's just bad timing, that it's all what's going on and at the same time a long weekend.
Yeah, exactly.
So,
absolutely. Now, you came across something ridiculous.
Did I?
You did, when we were talking about it. Hunkles. Came across hunkles.
An emerging word that hopefully does not catch on. A hunkle is a hunky uncle, and it is a dating platform thing that is analogous to dog fishing. So yes. Dog fishing is when you pose with somebody else's dog so that you appear to be a pet owner. I don't know why people think that
posing... It creates compassion. It's like, oh, it's a conversation starter.
Okay, I guess. If someone's posing with their cat or their dog. Or tigers, lots of gay men are posing with tigers for some
Everyone
reason.
Everyone is suddenly Joe Exotic.
It's really bizarre, yeah. And a hunkle is when somebody poses with their nieces or nephew. And that is...
For the purpose of putting that photo on dating platforms.
Yeah.
Wow.
Which is, I'm very mixed about that because there's something about it that it's not necessarily problematic, but it's heading in that direction.
I feel like that's got two flavors.
Yeah.
Flavor one, this is just a wholesome guy who, I've dropped my pen, a wholesome guy who is adores their niece or nephews.
Yeah.
I have a favorite niece who is Addie.
Yeah.
Addie Waddy, love her to bits. She also is currently my only niece. So that's fine. But, would I pose with her? Maybe. If there was a good photo of me and my niece and nephews, and I happen to look good in that photo, okay, cool. But then on the other flavor, that the feel I'm getting is almost commodifying these children.
Yeah.
Like objectifying them to make you look better. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. It's icky.
There's also a continuum. So there's a lot of hookup apps that people go on there looking for a relationship. And there's a lot of relationship apps that people go on there looking for a hookup. No app is exclusively for relationships or exclusively for hookups. It does not matter how they build their algorithm. Does not matter how they market themselves. Everybody will, I don't want to say misuse, but they will use an app in a manner that it's not intended for. So on the apps that are, let's say, on the hookup end of the scale, if you have pictures of guys with their nieces or nephews, there's something like weird about that, mildly icky. But if you're at the opposite end, the more relationship oriented ones, like there's something about it does feel wholesome.
Creates the family man image.
Yeah. And it's the kind of thing, like if that's their second or third picture, I'd be all for that. Kind of like, if somebody has their primary picture of them in a group, you always just assume it's the ugliest person in the picture.
Okay.
Yeah, there are studies about that if there's a group photo.
Why would you put a group photo as your go-to photo?
As your number one? People do it. People do it.
Don't do that. No, public service announcement. Don't do that.
Have that be your third or fourth picture.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Like if somebody, none of their pictures, you can see their hands. So it's all selfies.
You know, I think
to me that means they have no friends.
This is my advice as somebody who epically failed on dating things for a while.
Yeah.
Feel free to ignore me, listeners. Picture number one should be a good, candid photo.
Mm-hmm.
In good lighting, where you're smiling at a joke that was said off camera. So it's just you.
Yeah.
It's you in looking happy or whatever.
Yeah.
Picture two or three is maybe...
you and a friend.
You and a friend on vacation.
Yeah.
Maybe it's a topless pic, but you're on vacation. You look like you're having a good time.
Doing some kind of a social activity that proves you do have friends.
Yes. And activities.
Yeah.
And third one is when you dive into your character a bit more. Maybe you are a family man. Maybe your nieces and nephews are important to you. Maybe you really like Joe Exotic and posing with dead animals is a thing that you like. Who knows? But yes, I think I find that so many people just have like torsos or close-ups of bits of their face.
Yeah.
Like, I don't really know why the top left corner of your face is attractive. But, like, I mean, back that camera up, point it down, arrange some lighting. Actually, Tom Ford did a interview where he talked about how to improve lighting for Zoom meetings.
Oh.
Yeah, because people are like, I look hideous in these flat white lights. And it's like, well, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, no, it's true.
Very
few. What would you, top three, first three picks, what would they look like?
I mean, nothing with a hunkle.
Nothing with a hunkle.
Yeah.
Okay, fair enough.
I mean, yeah, your first... Well, it also depends on, like, do you have a good side or not? I mean, there's that issue.
I've never understood that.
I do.
Okay.
I absolutely do.
All right.
And part of it is just because I'm very pale and I'm very round-faced. So there are pictures of me where I look grotesquely obese, and there are pictures of me where it looks really good, but it's just a matter of, like, you need a good photographer who knows how to capture that.
Mm.
And, yeah...
But, and one side of your face betrays that better than the other?
If I look straight on to the camera, or if you catch me on a profile, it looks good. But if I'm on an angle, it tends to look a little bit odd.
Okay.
But that's, again, because I have such a round face. Mm. So, and then round face plus pale plus flat lighting. My head looks like a sphere.
Yeah.
It's not great.
Smushed blob of white and
an expanded pink. Blob of white and pink. Yeah.
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 That's romantic.
Yeah, I know, right? I mean,
and you're single right now for our listeners.
Oh my god! Oh, I don't want to talk about it.
All right, I think this is a good time to move on. We're going to be playing another track by the incredible Future Room. This is "Eat It Up," and we will be back. Welcome back to Can Queer, home of Canada's queer media. Now, coronavirus has claimed tens of thousands of lives across the country.
Yep.
Don't want to spark some alarm there.
Yeah, Canada's been doing fairly well.
Across the world, there have been tens of thousands of lives mm-hmm. lost to this. And just a lot of famous people who happen to be older. Now, the creator, or the credited creator, a good friend of Harvey Milk, mm-hmm. in San Francisco, I think he was school board trustee first, and then he kind of moved up from there into councilman. Harvey Milk, am I remembering
He's
that
the
right?
mayor.
He was the mayor?
Pretty
was
sure, yeah.
Mayor? I don't think he was the mayor.
Eventually he was.
Okay.
Of San Francisco? Yeah, I think so.
Anyway, Harvey Milk. But this guy, Gilbert Baker. Now, Gilbert Baker helped to create he created the first pride flag.
Right.
Way back in the 70s in San Francisco. So this is birth of the movement.
Yep.
And if I remember correctly,
it had 8 colors, not 6.
This is true.
And the 8 colors represented, they were symbolic of different concepts of the community. So it was supposed to be like healing, family, love. I can't remember them all. You have your phone open and I don't.
I do. So it was the Gay Freedom Day Parade, 25th of June, 1978, which is when it was made. And they weren't gay flags didn't exist back then.
Mm-hmm.
So apparently they had a team of 30 volunteers and $1,000 at the time, which was a lot of money. And they created a huge flag, 30 feet by 60 feet. And the way they did it is they got the muslin strips, the material, and then they dumped it in giant trash bags full of dye, like garbage bins full of dye,
okay.
dunk and squish and stuff, to hand dye the different stripes before Gilbert sewed them all together
okay.
for this 30-foot pride flag. And it was such a stunning visual that it became the symbol of the LGBT movement ever since. It's been decades and decades that this symbol has persevered. And this incredible man who's gone on to a lot of activism work after that, he toured Canada recently as well. He passed away due to a heart condition in his New York City home just last week.
Hmm.
What you looked something up about the facts?
Oh, just the symbolism of it. So some of it, like yellow is sunlight and green is nature, but then it's also life, healing, harmony, and spirit. And then the whole thing is supposed to represent diversity.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's a good symbol. It's nice and simple. Although I have heard people complain that the gays stole rainbows.
The gays stole rainbows. Although I think the health service is stealing it back. Because in the UK, one of the things that people are doing now is all of the various children that are now trapped inside their homes are drawing rainbows and plastering them all over their home windows.
Okay.
So now up and down the streets all over the country in the UK, there are rainbows with thank you NHS and thank you emergency service workers. Written on them by children all over the place, which is a really sweet gesture.
It's only a pride rainbow if there's specifically 6 colors. Because there's also, there's a flag that has an 8-color rainbow on it, but I can't remember which one. Actually, no, I think it might be like a provincial flag of Kenya or something. I don't remember. Anyway.
Now, there was another story.
It's vexillography. That's the study of flags.
So I wanted to mention that we are aware that Phyllis Leon, who is, I think, in her 90s, who was a very famous lesbian activist in the States,
yes.
co-created the first lesbian group there in 1955,
Ooh.
Ran a LGBT publication called The Ladder from 55 till, I think, 74 or 75.
So if you have an activist that predates Stonewall, you know you've got old blood.
Yeah, big time, long dedicated, and was married by the mayor of San Francisco in 2008, I think, when marriage first became legal in that state.
She was married for a long time before that. She was just confirmed.
Yeah, but it was the first actual wedding was this incredible woman. Her partner passed a few years ago. And Phyllis Leon has also passed last week. I bring both of these up because we're getting to that point now where, as a movement, you know, the incredible people who made what is possible today possible mm-hmm. are all of an age where, mm-hmm. you know, it's they're looking a little long in the tooth.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I think if ever there's a time to kind of, you know, speak to our elders and learn from our elders, it would be now.
Yeah.
I mean, via video conferencing phone, because
you don't
social distancing.
You don't expose them to anything unnecessary.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah. But yeah, it's really sad. And if we look at the way that COVID-19 is impacting older generations, that sort of leadership that we're losing, mm-hmm. that generational knowledge that we're losing, it's a travesty.
Yeah.
That, you know, is happening across the world. Yeah. Moving on, Hamilton Police have announced that their independent review into how they police the Pride Parade. So if you remember correctly, cast your minds back, ye old listeners. There were anti-gay protesters. I think they were quite religious nuts. Mm. Protesting against the Pride Parade. The police were made aware of these antagonistic opposition,
and they had strong indication that it would happen as well.
They were advised that it could be violent. It had been violent elsewhere nearby previously. Mm-hmm. The police took forever to show up. That was the thing where we saw a guy run up and smash people's head in with a helmet.
Yeah. So the story was the police were strongly recommended by the Pride organizations to be nowhere near any of their events because police make people feel uncomfortable. And then the police said, okay, even though they had a duty to protect. So what they did as a compromise is they're at the other end of the park. And this is a large park in Hamilton. So they were sort of at the other end of the park behind a bunch of bushes or some trees or something where they wouldn't be visible. So when the violence started, somebody had to run over and get them and bring them back. And that's about 2 minutes, but your average fight is over in 40 seconds. Mm. Like, fights are very, very fast. They're not like in the movies. So the cops were actually there pretty quickly, but they weren't on the scene. Yeah. And that was a part of the thing. And it was also like, you know, if the Pride organizers tell you to not be there, you do have a duty to protect. You cannot have groups of that number of people meeting without security. So, you know, the police failed on their side because they should have said, we need to be there. You know, if you want us to be beyond a certain range, but within visible distance, that's a fine compromise, but we need to be somewhere. We need to be around. And then on the other hand, a lot of people were saying to the Pride organizers, you knew that these groups were in the area. Why did you cancel security? And they were saying they had their own private security, but their own private security was, they didn't have enough people there.
Yeah, they were monitoring the doors. They couldn't, and also you can't ban the protesters. That was the other challenge, is that the Pride organizers weren't in a position to tell the protesters to leave.
Yeah.
Because it was a public park.
It was a situation where everybody there was a little bit wrong to some degree.
And let's be clear here, these protesters aren't some disgruntled locals.
Yeah.
You know, these are people who flew in from the States,
yeah.
from the far reaches of Canada,
yeah.
You know, to specifically to antagonize and cause a ruckus.
Yes.
It's just unacceptable. Well, we won't know now until June what exactly the police did.
Oh.
And the report on how that incident unfolded. The report has been postponed until June.
Oh.
Although with COVID-19 continuing to unfold, it may be pushed back further. We will continue to monitor the situation as things develop and keep folks informed. Unfortunately, there hasn't really been much in the way of LGBT news this week. A lot of American things happening, such a senator said such a thing. There's a lot of American news. We're not going to get into it.
Currently, the most interesting news is the meta news. So news about news, where like somebody announced something and then the media deliberately misreported it. And then somebody else reported on the original and compared it to how the media reported it and said, look at this difference. So there's a lot of that going around. I would say that's actually the most interesting news going around right now, looking at raw footage versus how things are presented.
Well, I think...
but still, I mean, there's not much content for us. That's really what it comes down to.
Right, well, we have run out of time, I'm afraid to say. I did want to just wrap up quickly because we did see some Canadians cheering the FDA. That's the Federal Drug Agency.
Drug Administration, yeah.
Drug Administration in the U.S.
The Food and Drug
Administration. Administration in the United States. They have brought down their blood ban to 3 months. From whatever it was before then. I think it was a year, which means that...
in a month's time, all gay men will be able to donate.
Yeah, so, yeah. So in 3 months' time, yeah. Basically, so if you are a gay man and you cross your legs and you're abstinent for 3 months...
Or bisexual, actually. We shouldn't do bi erasure.
That's absolutely...
If you're a man who has sex with other men...
Then stop, wait 3 months,
yeah,
and then you can donate blood. At which point, God knows what the blood supplies are going to look
like. Or if you've been a good boy, wait one more month. Because social distancing has been on for about a month now.
Oh, I see. Yeah. I see. Right, that makes sense.
Yeah.
But yes, no, I mean, I wanted to bring this up as well because Canada, that blood ban has been at 3 months for a while now.
Yeah.
The Trudeau government brought it down from 1 year to 3 months. They have said in their campaigns when they were running for election that they would look to remove it. They say it's discriminatory. The Canada Blood Services and Humour Quebec have not eliminated the three-month ban. But there is pressure from MPs in Canada to remove the three-month ban. And there's pressure internationally to do away with these blood bans in countries all over the world.
Yeah.
Because blood banks are in dire straits right now. And there's populations like me and you and my partner, you know... Monogamous relationships, no riskiness, HIV negative.
Yep.
You know, happy to give blood, except for me, I have panic attacks from needles. But, you know, happy to give blood, except, you know, the only option I have is to cross my legs for 3 months and wait. But
I have
can
gone,
the blood banks wait?
That's I've gone with question. The tried and tested method of stapling my knees together.
Stapling your knees together, also a very good method of abstaining.
Yeah.
Not recommended medical advice here, folks. You don't please don't do that. But yes, I mean, it is
ridiculous. We live in a world where we have to say that, where we actually have to say that joke that I made was a joke, by the way.
Yeah, yes. but yes, just for our Canadian listeners, this isn't new to Canada. Canada does have a three-month ban in place. There is pressure to pull it off, to remove it. We'll reach out to the Canadian Aid Society, actually, and see what's happening on that front. Maybe we'll get an interview ahead of next week's show. I have been Luke Smith.
I have been Sebastian. And
we're playing out with Kings of Our Kin. We played them last week. It's a different song. Very big fans of them. With the track The Middle.
Your handwriting is illegible.
It's I can ledge it. It's fine.
Oh my god.
I've been Luke Smith.
I've been Sebastian. And thank you for listening.
Timid boy with the frown, I wanna make a beat, wanna make a new sound. And every time he plays, he hits a new crowd. Every time he plays, he hits the ground. The light stop, you got quite a tune, but you never get anywhere unless you hit that boombox. Now I got my guitar, and if I play just right, it just may raise the bar, because I'm somehow living in fuse rock with hip hop into an electric sound. Electric shot, shot down. Stuck in the middle, I don't know what to do. I'm stuck in the middle. On the blue, I'm stuck in the middle of white, not prepared. I'm stuck in the middle, it'll shoot the tear. And I'm stuck in the middle, I don't know what to do. I'm stuck in the middle of beatless on the blue. I'm stuck in the middle of white, not prepared. I'm stuck in the middle with you. Matters and every single page you find that it is flat the truth through the vocal booth. Stargaze scene, I'm the next Babe Ruth. You find my talent is hidden, the lyrics is written on every single page. You find the pages are sitting down, reading the paper game scene, music maker. Every single second, I'm about sedation. Now I'm stuck in the middle, I don't know what to do. I'm stuck in the middle of feelings on the blue. I'm stuck in the middle of white, not prepared. I'm stuck in the middle, living through the jail. Stuck in the middle, I don't know. I change my music just to get a couple hits. But I say, don't abuse it, cause these haters are faders. Say this out the top, trying to pull me right back down.